Fanboy Smackdown, Episode 50, Michael Clayton.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Fanboy Smackdown. And tonight we're going to talk about Michael Clayton.
Yes, we are. I sense there's going to be some controversy.
Cool.
Maybe a little bit of a fiery debate.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm all for it. We've got some comments from the last episode, your first, already.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah. Yeah.
People love me. I know. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, you have made an impression. They just got sick of hearing me flying solo for so long. Like, anybody but him again all by himself.
Honestly, it was probably the subject matter. Everybody loves Harry Potter.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big part of it. You saw Michael Clayton?
I did. I saw it last night.
Excellent. I saw it over the weekend. I did my my insane marathon.
I know. I commend you, sir.
That we had mentioned that, like, right at the end of the last episode, we said I was going to go do that, and I did. I saw all five films: There Will Be Blood, Juno, Michael Clayton,
No Country for Old Men,
No Country for Old Men,
and
Atonement. I thought Michael Clayton was a good movie. It was the first one of the day, though. And of those movies, it and Juno were probably the most linear and mainstream. Even though...
Really?
Yeah. Well, and Michael Clayton wasn't completely linear because it had the
time
prologue.
Break, yeah.
But Juno was absolutely start to finish linear. And actually, There Will Be Blood was very linear also, but it took bigger leaps in time. It took really big leaps in time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say there's like, I can't remember exactly, but there's like 20, 25 years.
It spans.
The span of the story. But yeah, I mean, five good movies in one day. It was a long day though. Man, it was a long day. So Michael Clayton. What are your thoughts? Just like on a high level.
High level? I did not like it.
Okay.
The story didn't do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was very convoluted.
Okay.
And kind of unnecessary complicated in places.
Okay.
I wasn't really even digging the characters. I mean, George Clooney, I've seen better. And then the actress who won the Best Supporting, Tilda
Swinton?
Yeah. She was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of unnecessary complexness to her character that didn't really need to be there.
I'm going to disagree.
All right.
So, to start off the movie, and this will be just like the review. We're not going to give anything away at this point.
Right, we'll give it away later.
Yeah, we'll really get into it later. The movie's about a man named Michael Clayton. He's a lawyer. We find out that he is also a fixer. He's basically like the networking guy for a major law firm.
He takes care of problems, and if he can't take care of a problem, he knows the guy who can.
He knows exactly who can take care of him. He knows a lot of people, and he seems to be pretty good at what he does. I mean, we get the impression that for his job, he's good at it.
It's very nondescript, very kind of open-ended job.
Yeah, that he really doesn't have a job description within the company, and
he's just the guy you call.
Yeah, exactly. And but at the same time, he also has real problems in his personal life. Mm. That he's, you know, and that's kind of a cliche where he's really good at his job, but he as a fixer, but he can't fix what's wrong in his own personal life, which he probably would have the means to do some of.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we'll get into that a little bit later, but he, that almost seemed a little bit cliche.
I'll agree with that.
So, but the story is that there is one of his colleagues. Well, this is where the complication does come in.
Yeah.
Because the story is rather complicated. The most linear way I can describe it is there is it's a major class action lawsuit against
a large agricultural or genetic engineering, some sort of chemical company geared towards environmental growth.
And they didn't really get too specific. It was enough to
that you got the general idea.
You got the general idea that
it played on a lot of cliches of what you would assume would be the problem.
A big bad company.
Yeah,
a big
exactly.
bad company doing something to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt people.
Yeah.
In a way, it kind of had like the feel of one of those 70s activist movies. you know, that that were pretty common at the time, where it was, you know, going against the big, you know, going against the system, somebody fighting against the system. Mm-hmm. Where in this case they weren't really fighting against it, they were protecting it. The company that he worked for was, they were defending that company. They were defending the agro company against the class action suit. And we are also introduced to, and I can't remember her name, the character that Tilda Swinton played, and she is the corporate attorney for the agro company. Mm-hmm. She is the one that hires the attorneys if wherever they need to be. And she pretty much, I mean, they had a really interesting thing where they had her being interviewed to kind of explain her role in, mm-hmm. in the company and why she was doing what she was doing with the law firm that Clooney worked for and that. Now, the lead attorney on the case defending this agro company, he goes nuts. I mean, for lack of a better term, he drinks the Kool-Aid of the... He follows, you know, he's a company man, but at the same time, he starts believing what the class action folks are mm-hmm. suing them for. And he starts to side with them. And that's about the time that he goes nuts. And George Clooney's brought in to fix it, mm-hmm. to fix the situation. And the story isn't linear, so to say a whole lot more about it... I mean, because we've actually given away a big part of the story, but I'm comfortable giving away that much because I don't feel like we've really spoiled anything yet.
No,
but if you try to get too much more detailed into the explanation, mm-hmm. you start spoiling things pretty quickly.
Right. So suffice to say that George Clooney is brought in to fix the situation.
Yes.
And then events happen.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I won't really say anything else. I mean, I'm tempted to say more, but that would really get into spoiler territory that I'm not prepared to get into at this point.
Right. We'll wait 10 minutes.
Yeah. Because I'm going to evangelize this movie, so I'm going to encourage people to see it. So I'm not going to spoil it at this point. I did like it. I did not, of the five Best Picture movies, I would have probably ranked it number four. Mm. I don't think it was definitely not the best. It wasn't the weakest movie. I would say the weakest movie of the five that I saw when paired up with those movies was Juno. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was funny. It did exactly what it was supposed to do, but it just didn't, it wasn't that groundbreaking. It was a Kevin Smith movie with a little more leash on it. You know, it was held back just enough to keep it mainstream enough so that people really saw how good the dialogue was. The actors were really able to act and I'm speaking of Juno. And in that company, it wasn't as good as the other one, mm-hmm. as the other four. It was a good movie. It absolutely deserved recognition. I don't think it was in the same class as the others. I would say Michael Clayton is number four at that point, if Juno was five. I thought the acting was good. I thought the story was interesting. It was complicated, and it didn't try too much to explain itself, mm-hmm. but it did a good job of explaining itself without having a montage of here's how we got to this point.
Right. Like the interview is a good example of that. The exposition without the exposition.
Right. They use exposition in good ways, and I was a little bothered by the prologue element of it, where they told part of the story, mm-hmm. and then they said 4 days earlier. Because that always bugs me in a story, because it's you're basically saying, I have to show you the climax now to keep you interested in the story.
I have a comment about that, but okay. I will wait until we get to the spoilers section.
All right.
Because I have a complaint about that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the 4 days later. That kind of starts you off 75% through the story and then jump back to zero. It's like, it just started zero.
Yeah, started zero. I mean, if your story is not that good...
I don't think that the story would have been hurt in any way, shape, or form if they had just started at the beginning.
I think you're right. I don't think
it served any real purpose other than to put an explosion.
Yeah, because there was an explosion in the first 5 minutes
of the movie.
Yeah, and that was like trying to figure out why there was an explosion. Because watching it at that point, the explosion comes completely out of left field. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
What the hell just happened? Yeah. Is he driving a bad vehicle? Or I mean, there was just no explanation for it. And I felt a little bit I felt a little bit insulted as a viewer at that point that
they had to get your attention with an explosion they couldn't find any other way to do it.
Yeah, because I thought the characters were interesting enough, mm-hmm. cliche as they may be. I mean, because a lot of them were pretty archetypical, but it didn't bother me.
Right.
For the most part. I mean, the character of Michael Clayton being he could do his job really well, but his personal life was screwed up. The attorney that he's really good at what he does.
And then he goes crazy.
And then he goes crazy because he realizes that he's performing evils in the world, mm-hmm. even though he's been doing it for
15 yeah. some odd years.
Oh, it's like 30 odd years.
Well, he was working on the same case for like 15
years. Yeah, he was working on the same case for like 15 years. But doing basically the same thing in the company for mm-hmm. God knows how long.
Right.
Yeah. Those were cliches and those were archetypes, but the performances were really well done. Mm-hmm. I can't think of the guy's name who was the attorney who went nuts.
Wilkinson? Tony? Yes. Troy? Something with a T?
I'm not sure. That very well
something
could
Wilkinson.
Be.
At least I know that part.
Yeah, that's as accurate as we normally get. So that's fine. I thought he did a fantastic job because
I thought he was really good.
He was actually up for
best supporting actor.
Best supporting, and I mean, having seen that and having seen No Country for Old Men, I thought he actually had a better shot at it than the guy who won from No Country for Old Men. Mm. As creepy as that guy was and as and as good of a job as he did, he pretty much played a guy with no personality.
Right.
So I really didn't have that much to fall back on, where this guy, he played smart and he played crazy very well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there were times where you could see that he was absolutely lucid.
Right.
And it was, I mean, when he did that, it was...
The conversations with him, pretty much every conversation with him was golden.
Yes.
I'll agree with that. Yeah, he was really good.
He stole the show. When he was on screen,
mm-hmm.
he was the one to watch.
I
absolutely
agree.
I thought Clooney did a good job. It wasn't, I mean, it wasn't Oscar worthy. It was definitely not.
I didn't think there was much there to do on his part.
Because
he kind of shows up and he's got like this very detached, lackadaisical attitude towards everything. And it's like, I have that personality. I don't act. Look at me.
Yeah. But I also thought that when Tilda Swinton won the Oscar, mm-hmm. that she deserved it. Because I actually dug her role. And the conflict that she went through, that we'll get into more in the spoiler because it's a huge part of the story. I really did like her performance. I thought she did a really good job. I liked how complicated the story was. I dig stories that are like that are very thick and dense.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that really surprised me about the movie was that it was not a book first.
Really?
Yeah. It was because it was nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't have any source material before it. If you would have asked me, I would have sworn it was from a book. I mean,
yeah,
it just,
so would I.
It just had the. I mean, it was just so dense and layered, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, it felt like a book that they didn't give you all of the subplots for.
Right.
They give you parts of subplot. I mean, it just.
Yeah,
had
I got that impression because like Tilda Swinton's character and then his brother.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like both of those characters were missing like. Scenes that maybe would have explained why things are the way they are.
I'm wondering if there's not more there.
There probably is, and in like the director's cut or whatever
right.
they release.
Yeah, it did feel like there was more with some of those characters.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, though, I mean, I really enjoyed it. It for me, it was a really good legal drama thriller. And I mean, my review and my recommendation is if you like a good dense legal drama. I think this was very well done.
Oddly enough, I'm going to agree with you, except for that last part of it, about it being
well done.
Because I watched it with my wife, who's a law student. She's like, "This is fascinating. You don't understand that this is like concerns that people in the law profession have." And I was like, "Oh, nappy time."
Yeah, yeah. Julie really wants to watch it, and she's I mean, she is an attorney. So I can't wait for her to see it, to see kind of get her take on it. And she just hasn't gotten around to watching it. I think we've got it in our Netflix queue right now for her to watch.
No, I would have brought it.
It's not a big deal. But yeah, it's I can see where somebody might have had some problems with it because I do have some problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get into those in the last half, because it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. It is not a perfect movie. There are problems.
Right.
And there were some things that really bothered me about it, and some of the character choices they made.
For me, there was a big problem of, I don't want to say pacing, because the pacing is pretty, it's okay, but mm-hmm. I don't know, it felt uncomfortable or kind of awkward in places, like going between certain scenes, and I'm struggling to come up with an example that...
Probably, you know, there were a couple of times where there were scenes that felt unnecessary a little bit.
Right.
And the one I'm thinking of specifically was the birthday scene.
That, yeah, exactly. I think, yeah.
I mean, it felt like there was something more there.
Right.
There should have been more there. I mean,
yeah,
it served to introduce his brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
And we needed to see his brother, the cop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the only purpose it served.
But they don't even really—they don't even really point out that he's a cop in that scene. Like, he gets a gun out of his closet.
Yeah,
but he doesn't say anything else about it. Like, he doesn't put on a badge or.
Yeah, they don't really say it there, but it gets mentioned somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I know the kid mentions it. His son mentions it right. At one point, and yeah, though I mean that scene—it served to introduce a couple of characters.
That, yeah.
But there should have been more there. It wasn't for how dense and layered the rest of the movie was.
Right. It was
that
just,
one was just. There.
Whoa.
Here's your characters. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
it felt like it could have been done better.
Mm-hmm.
That's my recommendation for it. I'm trying to think. There's really not any violence, I mean, except for the explosion.
No, there's no real violence.
There's no real violence. No real, I mean, no sexuality at all, except for the one scene. And you really, I mean, they cut it before it gets too far.
Thankfully.
Yes. Yeah, that scene made me uncomfortable, because yeah. It's like, you can stop now.
Yeah.
Stop, please.
How far to the crying game are we going to get here?
I mean, the language was there, but...
When isn't the language
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, if there are any hang-ups to this movie. And there's really not. I mean, it mm-hmm. felt like, you know, an amped-up version of a, you know, any other legal drama. There really wasn't right. anything out of the ordinary. And it wasn't like a murder drama where you're going to see bodies and blood and
all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
It really had nothing to do with that. So, but I mean, that's really all I can... I think I can say without...
Yeah, exactly. I don't have much more, because most of my complaints are spoiler-laden.
Yes, yes. All right, so we're going to go ahead and take a little break, and then we will go ahead for the spoilage.
Consider this promo a controlled substance. Only one drug can bring the visceral and the sublime together in a single trip. Where the best and the worst of the human drive boils down into a techno-art concoction that's half street-level heaven and half the fiery beauty of hell. From Matt Wallace, Parsec award-winning author of The Failed Cities Monologues, this is The Next Fix. Kick back to the strains of Earth's Last Top 40 as the final human DJ sends a shout-out over The Last Frequency. Step into the hard-boiled beauty of the Lusting Corridor, where that which once escaped a man is met again. Tool up with a lone cop who polices the terrifying carrion underground of the future as you seek the end of flesh. Experience one of the most unique and captivating imaginations in fiction today, collected for the first time anywhere in print and featuring 12 original stories and one full-length novella, The Next Fix by Matt Wallace. Pre-order your copy today in limited edition hardcover from ApexBookCompany.com and have it personally inscribed by the author himself. Are you ready for The Next Fix?
And we're back.
Spoiler time.
Yeah, it's going to get ugly.
It is. It's business time.
Yes. So one of the first problems I had with it...
All right, you can go first.
And, you know, maybe it was, and maybe it's just my problem with the character. And I don't know if it was a problem with the character or if it was a problem with how they played the character. But Clooney and the kid that they had for his son did not seem like, it was like a kid that he knew that he was just
vaguely
picking up and dropping off at school because he just happened to be in the neighborhood. He didn't touch the kid at all. I mean, it really threw me off when I'm sitting there watching him and the first time we see the kid, he's coming out of school, and he or out of the house.
Yeah, he's coming out of the house.
Out of the mom's house. Clooney opens the door. The kid jumps in to the car. Mm-hmm. It's like, didn't say hi.
Yeah, exactly. Any sort of greeting. There was no sort of familial attitude on either part.
Yeah, the kid didn't run up and hug him or anything. And it was just really weird.
I'm glad you brought up the kid because I completely forgot about him.
Yeah, I mean...
It seemed to me that he served absolutely no purpose in the story except to...
He was exposition.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of exposition for the kid to introduce some of the other family members, really.
Yeah, other family members that ended up serving no purpose.
Well, the brother ended up serving the purpose...
Of driving him to...
No.
Not the drunk brother.
The cop brother. The cop brother actually did push the plot along.
Right.
Because he did actually help him. He gave him that stand. The seal, and then he ended up bringing the posse in at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
But that
whole relationship was weird because he's like, all right, I got to go out. I'll take my kid with me, and I'll drive around the streets for hours, and then I'll just leave my kid in the car while I go chase after this guy. It's
like, you said we'd go to the movie, Dad. Stay here, lock the door.
You're a bastard, Dad.
Yeah. My dad is a dick. and then the kid talking to the nut guy. That was just creepy.
That was creepy.
That was really weird.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, we are entering a whole new realm of badness.
Yeah.
That I did not expect this movie to go to.
Well, and see what really threw me is, I mean, at that point I'm thinking, okay, the guy really is nuts.
Right.
And now they've told us he's off his meds and everything, and he's acting crazy. But when they get back to the city, and he's carrying the bread, they have that conversation.
That conversation was awesome, by the way.
It was. That was brilliant.
Because you can just see, like, he kind of, like, moves in and out of being crazy, and then Michael Clayton starts trying to threaten him. And then he's like that 45 seconds of lucidity where he's just like, dude. There's one place you do not want to see me, and it's a courtroom.
Yep.
And he gives him the death eye, and he's like, I gotta go.
See, that one scene alone was the scene that, for me, I would have given him the Oscar for that scene.
Probably,
because that scene was just incredible. And then having seen him before that in the deposition, where he's screaming and yelling and freaking and out and stripping his clothes off, and then to see him, you know, acting kind of just like the village idiot, but... Then all of a sudden, his face just changes, and you can see there.
Yeah, exactly.
He is just brutal behind those eyes.
He just brings it to the table.
And it's like,
yeah.
don't even think about it.
Yeah,
I will end you in the courtroom. and they said that he was off his meds, so I guess that kind of forgave some of the craziness. But at the same time, it felt like with seeing that scene. That he wasn't crazy.
Right, exactly.
That he was playing crazy to excuse himself later on for what he knew he was going to do. But if that was the case, then why did he have that prolonged conversation with the kid?
About the book.
Because that really seemed the crazy.
Yeah.
That solidified the crazy.
I don't know where that was going.
That was weird. And that, I mean, that seems like another one of those scenes that more should have been there. And...
Because
they made a point of the book and highlighting passages.
Exactly. They made a whole thing about how the kid, like, the movie starts off and the kid's like, oh, the book. And then kind of in the little prologue and then at the end where he's all up on the horses because it's a picture out of the book.
Right.
And it's like, okay, we're not going to do anything with the book now?
I mean, it almost felt like there should have been at least another scene where maybe Michael Clayton actually reads the book.
Yeah, or something happens from the book. Exactly.
I mean, because the kid's telling him at the first time we see the kid, Dad, you really need to read the book.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like if we would have had a scene paying that off with him reading the book and gaining some...
Well, he looks through the book later and he gets the receipt.
That's true. So maybe that is the payoff.
Yeah, that was a weak payoff.
It was a weak payoff.
After how much they built the book up, it was a very weak payoff.
Well, and he recognized the book, though, as being the book from his son, which did kind of throw him off. Because he's like, that's the, you know.
That's creepy.
That's a little weird. The prologue scene, the beginning of the movie.
What was going on there? I understand,
it introduced the character. It introduced the character of Michael Clayton. It introduced the problems that he had. I mean, we saw that he was at a backyard poker game in the middle of the night. And it introduced the fact that he was a fixer by visiting a character that had nothing to do with the story. Rest of the story.
Exactly.
And then him leaving there Storm. And his car blowing up.
Well, before that, he gets out to go visit the horses.
Yeah.
What was going on there?
Yeah, it was like, there are horses on the hill. I'm going to go walk
I have to go investigate.
And then his car blows up.
Yeah.
Now, well, I mean, and they even showed stuff with the attorneys and Tilda Swinton's character freaking out in the bathroom.
Right.
I mean, so it did give a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
And it set a scene that we didn't, I mean, at that point, had no clue what the hell was going on.
Exactly. And then, like, before that, you get the overtones of the crazy guy just rambling in the background.
Yeah.
Which was... Everything that guy said was awesome. So
yeah, that was really good. I mean, and that ended up paying off really nicely. If they would have just had that voicemail and then, you know, kept going from there, if that was the only bit of flashback, foreshadowing, prelogue that we had, was his crazy rambling voicemail, I would have been cool with that.
Yeah, because
that
was crazy, really good. His crazy rambling was good, crazy yes, and rambling.
Yes, it was. Yeah, that prologue really didn't serve much purpose other than to handhold people into the movie.
Yeah. Explosion.
Yeah. Boom. We have boom, a boom. We have a boom. And 4 days earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Nice.
What the hell?
And I don't really understand, like...
I mean, I'm not a big fan of prologues in anything, period. I'm not a fan of prologues in books. I'm not fan of prologues in movies. When they do them like that, where it's, you know, cheating the end of the movie, it's just cheap.
Like, I want to talk about cheating the end of the movie. Okay, did you watch the Oscars?
Oh my god.
I was like, what are you doing?
And that's not the only movie they cheated the end of.
Oh no, dude, I don't want to hear.
No, I'm not going to say anything else because I you know, I'm watching stuff and I was like, oh my god, and I'm not going to say which movies, but because I saw all 5 Best Picture movies and things were happening and I turned at one point. Especially the scene that they cheated in this one.
Yeah, oh, that was killer. It's like
that's the end of the movie. I turned around to Julie and I said, close your eyes, hold your hands over your ears, and I just kept talking louder and louder. I said, just listen to my voice. Don't pay attention to what's going on the screen. She's like, what? I said, just don't pay attention because they're ruining the movie. If you haven't seen the movie, they're ruining it.
Yeah, that was killer. It's like, what are you doing? That's like, because the entire movie, I'm like, all right. Where's the scene with the chick, where he confronts the chick?
Yeah.
All right, where's the scene? Where's it? Oh, last 2 minutes of the movie, there it is.
Yeah.
What? Seriously?
That was really disappointing. I
know, I was so pissed.
And that's not the only movie they did it with.
That's unpleasant.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll see it. I mean, if you watch some of the other movies, you will definitely see it. Yeah, I was
I was like, that was seriously?
Insane. That was really insane.
Okay. His drunk brother. The dude's entire purpose in this movie was he caused the debt and then drove him to the city.
Yeah.
The entire birthday scene?
But the debt...
What was going on?
Really, the only thing that the debt... The only purpose the debt even served was so that he could sell out...
The crazy guy.
The crazy guy. I mean, it was
like weak.
It was pretty weak. I will give you that. That was pretty weak. It was, I mean, that whole bit was plot. I mean, that was
it could have been a gambling debt and then just completely removed that unnecessary character.
Yeah, I mean, well, that wasn't the only unnecessary character.
They even set up the whole gambling thing with him, too.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a recovering gambling guy. Okay.
Which kind of led to everybody assuming that his debts were because of his gambling.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a way, it kind of made him a little more noble. Than if it was just his problem. Mm-hmm. Because apparently he's gotten past his problem.
Right. And then his new problem is his brother.
Is his brother, the idiot, who... And in a way, he's really fixing his brother. Mm-hmm. He is pulling a fixer on his brother. Because apparently he didn't need to give any money.
Right.
His investment in the place was already gone. For him, the money was just to save his brother's ass. Mm-hmm. I mean... If he wouldn't have given the 75 grand, his brother was dead.
Right.
And that's it. I mean, it didn't seem like it was going to come back on him at all, from what I could tell.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it would have because he wasn't giving his brother up.
Well, yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have given his brother up. I mean, that, and that was the point. And that's why he worked as hard as he did to get the 75 grand to save his brother. But I mean, if he was just a complete asshole, he could have said, he could have said, you know, it was his problem.
Yeah.
He screwed me too. Get him.
Exactly.
You know, in a way, he said he sold out the other guy for the money, but he sold out the other guy for his brother. Mm-hmm. Which didn't really, I mean, by that point, it was so focused on getting the money, getting the money, getting the money, that it seemed that the plot forgot why he was getting the money.
Right.
Because
I got
even,
that sense too.
Because he even tells her at the end, he said, you know, I sold out this guy for 80 grand in a 3-year contract. And and it was like, well, no, that's not really why you did it.
Well, I'd like to think that part of that speech was a lot of smoke and mirrors, just dupe her into saying something stupid.
Well, and there was a lot of smoke and mirrors with that. I am Shiva, the god of death.
That was hilarious.
That was great.
I laughed both times that came up in the movie.
Actually, I think pretty much our whole theater did, too. Both times it came up.
There were a couple little funny things like that.
Oh, yeah.
The Tilda Swinton and that guy are standing outside, and he's like, so, we have the other option. She's like, okay. Okay, you understand, or okay, proceed.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
That is one thing I liked about the movie. The dialogue was very natural feeling.
Yeah, it was.
Like, even when he's yelling at her in the end, like, a lot of times in movies when people are having really intense interchanges, I don't get the sense that they're really, like, I would never talk that way to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I was really, really emotionally charged and having a heated discussion with somebody, I would never talk that way to somebody.
Right.
But I get the impression that he's speaking the way that I would talk when I was yelling at somebody or trying to dupe somebody or do something in that kind of charged context.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you there.
And that kind of goes on through the entire movie, too.
Yeah, the dialogue is very natural feeling. It's there's not a lot of monologue to it or...
Right, or I don't want to say writing to it, but there's a lot of romanticization of language or communication between two people when you start writing scripts.
Yes. And what's interesting is you could almost get away with that considering all these people
are
attorneys,
lawyers, yeah.
Yeah, and who are used to using words as their tools.
Exactly.
And there's really not. There is a lot of simple language for a rather complex subject.
Yeah.
I was a little bit confused actually in part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
When we're starting to get introduced to the crazy attorney, and we find out that he lost his wife. And he kept mentioning Anna. Mm-hmm. Now, later we figure out who Anna is.
Right.
But at the point when he's first talking about her, I was thinking he was referring to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a little bit confusing because they said his wife had died and his daughter, and they just kind of hushed up about the daughter.
Yeah, the daughter's off in Europe.
Yeah, now the daughter is off in Europe at the end. It was like...
Why even mention the daughter? I mean, I guess they can kind of set up that whole, since his wife is gone... He's trying to have a relationship with his daughter, but his daughter's gone, so he's kind of adopted this
girl. They had to have the daughter out of town too, because otherwise they couldn't open up the crime scene.
Yeah, exactly.
For Michael Clayton to go in and break in and get caught. So, I mean, there was a lot of little things like that at a very high level they don't seem important.
Right, but
for all the little pieces of the puzzle, with how dense everything had to be to make all the pieces fit, you had to have something in there. And I think that's why I felt like I was watching a movie that was written from a book, because it was so many little pieces. And it was kind of like what we talked about with Harry Potter last week, the first Harry Potter book.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much in there, and the plot requires A, B, C, D, E.
Right.
And it felt like that in the same way that they brushed over a few things just to get
that stuff out,
that stuff in there, just to move the plot to the next point. And it felt like it was a book, like they had to include the daughter being overseas because maybe that played another part in it that had to get brushed over in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's not the case. In which case, it actually gave me a lot more respect for the script.
Mm. Yeah, that's more impressive to me that it wasn't actually a book first.
Right. Right, because I didn't realize it until I was watching the Oscars, and the category that it was nominated in was Best Original Screenplay, which implies that there was no source material for it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, I was rather impressed with that. I like the Kinko's guy was apparently plied very easily with money. They didn't show it, But you get the sense that he gave him like $50 to hold the boxes. Mm-hmm. Then the guy came up a few minutes later and gave him like $100 to give him one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so they know what he had.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty clever. And, you know, there, I'm trying to think. That was really one of the only things that happened kind of off screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't a real big leap when it happened.
Right.
Because you saw the guy in the back of the store who was following him. So it wasn't a huge surprise that that guy would end up with a copy of the mm-hmm. of the memo that used to seal the fate of the company.
His car explodes.
Yes.
His first inclination is he runs down, he looks inside. He knows they're trying to kill him. Uh-huh. So he takes out his wallet and his keys and everything and throws them in the car. Or he takes out his wallet, all the crap in his pockets, and throws them in the car. Then runs away. And then somehow...
What I'm curious about...
How could they not figure out that nobody was in the car?
There was not a body in the car?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wait a minute. No. Who would have notified them? Who would have found out about the car?
Oh, I guess the local cops. Oh, I guess...
The police. His brother was involved. You know what? It bothered me that in the time, but now that I think about it, it bothered me that he's just throwing his ID into the car and running. If he ended up getting his brother involved, his brother from the police department could have had somebody make the call saying he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's something else that happened off screen that it does fit.
It fits with the whole ending scene where his brother's there. With
and at that point, I was just so... The whole sting at the end was just so good that I didn't backtrack and put that piece together. But yeah.
That conversation between him and the chick's name, who I can't remember.
Yeah. Tilda Swinton?
Yeah, there we go. It's so weird.
It is an unusual name. She's Irish, though, so... Mm. As if her flaming red hair at the Oscars wasn't.
Yeah, that was some hair.
And that god-awful,
that dress was so terrible. It was like, whoa, what is going on?
Yeah, it was like, did she...
I don't think she expected to win.
She, like, found some pimp's velour sheets and just wrapped them around her and pinned them on or something. No makeup, bad hair. I mean, it was like, what the hell were you thinking? And even when she got up to make her speech, though, it was pretty obvious she had no inclination she wasn't going to win. She's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, she's like, thanks.
Yeah.
See ya.
I'm screwed.
And that whole exchange between them at the end was great.
That was really good.
He just breaks her apart.
Yes, he does. And just gets her to give him the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then pulls out the cell phone. It was like,
takes her picture.
Oh, you want me to take a picture to go along with this?
Yeah.
It's great.
That was great.
That was really good. So, I mean, all in all, I liked the movie. I did think there were some problems with it. But, I mean, there really wasn't so many that it distracted me. There were a couple of little things that at the moment distracted me. And at the moment, the kid and their total not. Relationship, the way it seemed that there were certain things introduced that didn't really have a point. Him throwing all of his personal effects into the car, but there wouldn't have been a body.
Right.
But, you know, it was one of those things that at the moment, all those things bothered me.
Mm.
Stepping back from the movie now, you know, almost a week later.
Right.
The pieces are all there and they all fit. So even the problems that I had with it aren't really problems anymore, you know? It's interesting.
I'm not going to go ahead and say that it wasn't a good movie,
mm-hmm.
because I think it was a good movie. It's just not my style. It was a little slower than the movies I tend to prefer.
And that's fair. I mean, not every movie is going to be for everybody. I mean, you should... If you haven't heard the episode we did about Apocalypto, that was quite interesting. Another situation of a good movie...
Mm-hmm.
Neither of us denied that it was a good movie, but one of us really enjoyed the movie, me. and the other, Tony, just, you know, he had problems with some of the subject matter. I mean, that's, you know, that's fair. That's a fair criticism. And that's, you know, that's going to happen. You know, one of the cool things about reviewing the movies in this way, people are going to listen to this podcast and they're going to, you know, mm-hmm. they may look at one or the other of us as, for a movie like this, I may lean more toward Tony's point of view or Adam's point of view. So, I mean, it's good that we don't agree on some of this stuff and that there are those differences. It's going to make it a lot easier for the listeners to see if they're enjoying the movie or not. So that was, I mean, that's really all I think about talked out on Michael Clayton. I can't think of a whole lot else. Me too, but
now that we're actually talking about like this kind of meta movie reviewing, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie? Yeah. Absolutely, it's North by Northwest. And yours?
My favorite movie is 8 Days a Week.
8 Days a Week?
8 Days a Week.
What? Oh, wait a minute. Beatles?
No.
Wait a minute. What am I thinking of?
Kerry Russell, mid-90s. It's about a guy who, it's like his last year before he goes away to college.
Uh-huh.
And the girl, he's loved the girl across the street forever. It's okay. A comedy.
Yeah.
And so, to win her affection, he sits out under her window every day and night. Like, he lives in her front lawn under her window.
Okay.
And he watches the neighborhood happen around him.
Interesting.
I'll bring it over if you have a VCR.
Not anymore.
Maybe I'll find a DVD.
We've killed the last VCR in the house. Actually, it's in the basement, right?
I'm jealous.
Yeah, we still have a couple of videotapes.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been converting since, like, 99, 2000.
Yeah.
And most of the VHS we still have in the house was the kids' movies.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody would give us old VHS tapes from their kids. And, we just kind of inherited a lot of stuff. But, yeah, we began the process of converting over.
Right. Well, one half of my marriage doesn't want to get rid of the VCR. And the 80-some-odd VHS she has.
Ooh, yeah, that does make it difficult. It's tough, but
I know, you gotta
it is
do
a
it.
Dying tech. And now, especially that we're on to, you know,
the next generation of DVD. Yeah.
And that there's been a clearly defined winner in the next generation of DVD now.
That's a shame. Not because I really cared about either technology, but because we have HDTV and HD radio,
mm-hmm.
and now we have Blu-ray DVDs. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Can we just rename it HD?
Yeah.
Because it.
Well, what I will find interesting is if, since it has become so clearly defined that Blu-ray is the winner,
mm-hmm.
and the tech is such that I would think with firmware upgrades, a lot of these players could probably play both of them. It'll be interesting to see if in the next year or so. There's still, well, not still, but there are hybrid players so that people can actually play both of them if they did make the losing choice.
Mm.
Or if they're doing like some people are now doing right now and going out and buying the players and buying the movies really cheap. Mm. I've heard you can get some of the players for like $50 right now or
really?
Something like that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Somebody was saying that, well, I guess like the Xbox 360?
The PlayStation 3 is the Blu-ray player.
PlayStation 3 is the Blu-ray player, but Xbox 360
does
has
the HD
add-on.
Yeah, the adapter or whatever.
The adapter that was like $200.
Mm-hmm.
Those adapters, I've heard, are now $50.
That's awesome.
And so, and I think somebody said that they're being made by Toshiba or something. I was reading this on a forum, so I'm probably, yeah, you know, I'm either absolutely right or completely don't know what I'm talking about, which is probably the latter. That you can get like one of these players, and until the end of the month, which this won't even post until after the end of the month,
right.
probably, that you'll be able to, you'll still be able to get all the bonuses and stuff, mm-hmm. and get like 6 free DVDs or something like that to go along with it. But I guess the DVD prices are now, the HD DVD prices are dropping,
yeah.
And I mean, it was kind of like what happened with the Dreamcast when I got onto it. Because they had announced that they were stopping it like 6 months before they did, but nobody believed them.
Mm-hmm.
So I told everybody that when it was, because it happened like in late November when it happened, and I told my folks, I said, I want one of these for Christmas. It will hit $50. That's when you should buy it. And sure enough, that year I got it for Christmas, and I got a shit ton of DVD or games for it because the games were all like $5-$10, brand new.
Yeah, exactly.
And it didn't bother me because I still don't have anything. I mean, the newest console I have is the Dreamcast. yeah.
Well, you know what? I may be getting a PlayStation 3.
Really?
Only because it's a Blu-ray player.
Well, it's just as cheap as getting a player.
And exactly, and I can play games on it.
Exactly. Well,
sort of.
If you could find games to play on.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, you know, it was a situation that was the way to go for me at the time. I didn't have a console to use, and for me, they were all brand new games. Mm-hmm. So I had, you know, a year's worth of entertainment for like $100. It was great. I mean, I probably dropped another $40 the day after Christmas. because I went to Best Buy and bought one of every Dreamcast game they still had in the store, which they didn't have many, but they were selling them for anywhere between $4 and $10.
Yeah.
You know,
just get them out.
Unreal Tournament for $10.
Unloaded by the shovelful.
And I played the hell out of that. Didn't bother me. I was having a good time with it. Yeah. Yeah. It looks like the HD DVD war is over. Doesn't bother me. I don't have an HD TV. So
I've got one. I don't really.
Yeah.
The HD thing is, I mean, how much quality? There's like this diminishing return on quality. And from VHS to DVD, I mean, it was noticeable.
Yes, it was.
Big time.
Yes, but it was.
I'm watching. I have HD and regular TV now. And side by side, I mean, you can tell a difference, but mm-hmm. it's not this, I have to have this and I will never go back to analog TV and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, it doesn't seem quite as marked as when it went from from VHS to DVD. It was funny when we got our first DVD player. It was like pulling teeth to buy one which is every piece of technology we have in the house. It's the same story. I fight and fight and fight to get it in the house, and by the time we get it into the house, I convince Julie that it is worth having. We get it. Within 6 months, she wants another one for another part of the house. It was the DVRs. It was the DVD players. We went to Best Buy, and I showed it to her. She didn't believe it. It wasn't until we got home with it, and there was a movie that I can't remember how it all exactly worked out. We had the movie, and she had the same movie, or we had the same movie on DVD or on VHS also. Put the VHS in, played it. She's like, what are you trying to prove? And I just switched it over while the DVD was still playing, and it was like, whoa. She's like, there is a difference. I said, and you don't have to rewind the damn thing.
I know.
You know?
It's so, and, well, the big thing with the DVD was, even if you don't even care about the quality of rewinding, you get stuff with the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the special features on discs are, in like, double the value of the DVD.
Easily. Easily. Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget after setting up the DVD player, one of the first things I did was like director's commentaries. I watched every one of them for the first 20 DVDs I bought, you know, just because they were really, really interesting.
Don't ever watch the Lord of the Rings commentary.
Really?
Because Ian McClellan is really boring. Like, you can hear all of the other cast members laugh and joke and having a good time for 10 minutes or so, and then he starts talking. Silence. It's like you can almost hear the door open and people leave the room. Then they come back and they have a good time for 10 minutes and then it's him again. It's terrible.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, I think this, we'll probably go ahead and call this one a night.
Good. I'm tired.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Go ahead and leave voicemail, email. I'm not going to run through it all again because we did it last time. It gets boring if we do it too many times. I get bored with saying it. And I'm not sure exactly when we're going to release this one, but probably whenever we release this one will be
the new release date.
We did it on Friday last time.
Just to hit the 222.
Just to hit 222 because it was cool. And it worked.
Yeah. That one day editing turnaround time is not good, though.
No. If something happens, it's not worth it. Plus Thursday night, there's, you know.
Lost
and Smallville and too much other good stuff to do on Thursday evenings. All right, so we'll catch you guys next time and have a good one. See ya.
Night.
I am Shiva, the god of death.